Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. This is the collector segment, and we have more Iron Man, really good shape. This is Iron Man number 91. It's continued from the previous one. It has the controller punching Iron Man as he's trying to save a woman. It says the controller strikes again. Fool, my slave discs give me the strength of 100 men. There isn't a cage on earth that could hold me now. And Iron Man's thinking to himself, and this time he might just win. We have 92, which has the Melter on the cover, and it says, "Burn, hero, burn. Look who's back deadlier than ever. It's the mysterious Melter, the one foe who can destroy Shellhead's armor. And if Iron Man falls, no one can stand against him." Did we say no one? And it looks like it has the old version of Iron Man coming to sit to the rescue. And the yellow version of, you had the gray version of Iron Man and then the all yellow armor. It's the all yellow armor. We have Iron Man number 93. He's fighting a character that looks like a pirate. His name is Kraken. He says, "You lose, Kraken." This one looks like Kirby, but I don't see the Kirby logo on the cover. There's Crackle, though. "Not this time, Shellhead. If you defeat me, my man will kill your friends. I'm not the loser, Iron Man. You are." And then again, it's got Kraken on the cover on number 94. All that action frenzy at 50 fathoms. It's a battle to the death between the cunning cutlass of Kraken and the perilous power of Iron Man. Iron Man number 95, Ultimo Unleashed. Only the armored Avenger stands between our nation's capital and certain destruction. And it has Iron Man fighting Ultimo, and he's blasting him. I have Iron Man number 96. This has Iron Man on the ground. It says Iron Man is down. Ultimo's beaten him, and Iron Man's armor is pretty beaten up and has holes in it everywhere. And Iron Man says, "No, the battle's only begun. The power and the fury." Iron Man number 98. It's the Living Inferno Sunfire. Why must Iron Man don his armor to survive? Still versus the solar flame, so he fights a mutant. We have Iron Man number 99. It says Iron Man trapped on the Mandarin's rocket of Doomsday. The Mandarin looks very different on this cover. It'd be hard for me to tell it was the Mandarin. He says, "Too late, Avenger. You can shatter these titanium chains, but not in time to save yourself or an unsuspecting world." And Iron Man's strapped to a rocket and being launched into space. Iron Man number 100. This just has 100 and Iron Man breaking a steel girder over his head. Iron Man 101. This has the monster of Frankenstein, the most unexpected foe of the year. The armored Avenger battles for his life against the monster of Frankenstein. And there's a bunch of little small men attacking him too. Interesting. Iron Man 102. It has Dreadknight. Iron Man's fighting Dreadknight for an all-out Iron Man's past, a villain new and deadly, Dawn of the Dreadknight. So I wonder if that's his first appearance. This has one of my favorite characters, the Jack of Hearts. Iron Man takes on the Jack of Hearts and the merciless minions of Midas, Thunder over Long Island, and he's fighting in air while people are shooting at him, the Jack of Hearts. Madam Mask is on this cover with two other guys, and it says the anger and the anguish, hounded by his enemies, torn between his friends, the armored Avenger battles alone. This Iron Man 104, 105 has the Jack of Hearts in it again. "You've gone against all you stood for, Shellhead." That's what the Jack of Hearts saying. "We're going to turn your back or stop you cold." Iron Man challenged by the combined might of the Guardsmen, the Wrath, and the Jack of Hearts face off. We have Iron Man 106, where he's protecting Madam Mask and Jack of Hearts from a bunch of other Iron Mans. One of the robotic Iron Mans is saying, "Your friends have fallen, Avenger, and you shall be next. No one can survive the Legion of the Iron Man. Last stand at Stark International." 107 is Iron Man, Hour of the Golden Doom. Final showdown against the maddening menace of Midas. and the Jack of Hearts on the cover again, along with the Guardsmen and Madame Mask. So this must be like an ongoing story. On this cover of 108, we have one of my all-time favorites, Yellow Jacket, Hank Pym. And this one says, "The more you hit him, the bigger he grows," and has Iron Man fighting some guy. And it says, "Iron Man and Yellow Jacket, helpless before the rampage of the growing man." And that wraps up this collector segment. And stay tuned for Mike M's Weekly Reads. Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And a couple things we're going to discuss. I'm going to discuss podcasts. I have a poll question. And I just want to give you a history. I've been podcasting for, you know, over 10 years. And it all started with me interacting with a podcast, Comic Book Noise. I was just always commenting and saying, okay, you know, I was learning about different comics from Innovation and Eclipse and Kamiko, and it was Derek Coward, and that's where my show's hosted. All of them are hosted on his network. And I don't know how it came out, but I used to share with him Mike M's Weekly Reads. This is weird, because this is how this show came out many, many years later. And it was just a summary of what I read that week. And Derek said to me, he's like, "Well, why don't you record your own podcast?" And at first I was reluctant, didn't want to. And then I said, "I'll give it a try." And I did. And I recorded Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise, and he released it for me. He even made a theme for it. And that was my launch into podcasting. And I also did a team up with him and Tim Terrell. We did a kind of a crossover early on where we talked about several books. One was True Story, Swear to God, which is an amazing autobiographical book by Tom Beland, and several others. But what was key about this one is we had Tim Terrell, Derek Coward, and myself. Tim Terrell used to do a podcast called Thoom, and I think he's the one that picked it for us to review. So we all had a copy of this book, and we all reviewed it, and we absolutely loved it, and our review got to Tom Beland, and a lot came from it. Like, he's like, "I want to be on your show," and that was like crazy. And Tom has since been really grateful to me. I have several commissions from him that I paid for, but one year I went to San Diego Comic-Con, and he goes, "You're the one that did that interview. You know, you're the one that did the promotion of True Story, Swear to God." And I actually got a page from that comic. He gave it to me and signed it. So that was pretty amazing. That was one of the, you know, big things. And then I started poking around and having... A lot of people think I joke around this Forum for Geeks thing and stuff, but it did exist. And the Comic Geek Speak was another podcast I listened to. And a forum was on there, and that's how I met a lot of my co-hosts and people that I met at cons and everything is through that forum. And it really was a way to meet friends before Facebook and Twitter. There was forums. And this forum was so big, and it built a community, and they essentially hosted it and let you spawn off your own podcast and put it on this forum. And that was the Comic Geek Speak forum. And it became so popular, and they filled so much space, and they started to cost money, that they spawned it off into its own thing called Forum for Geeks. And that lasted for quite a while. And even before then, as I was listening to that podcast, I was chatting with a lot of people, and one of them was Heath Holland. And I felt that we had a lot in common, and I asked him if he wanted to do a podcast, and he was like, sure. And so we did a podcast, and that became Geek Brunch. And Geek Brunch, me and Heath did like for many years, and we had it was the reason that I started going to cons. We had a meetup in Heroes Con one year. It was one of my favorite times of my life, and that was amazing. So that started Geek Brunch, and I think even before that, there was a podcast called Bullpen Bulletins with Vince and David A. Price. And I starred in that one. I had a guest spot where we talked about an Amazing Spider-Man issue with Derek Coward as well. And on that forum, the Bullpen Bulletins forum, they had a forum there, and it almost was like a live chat, I think, if I remember correctly. And I became really good friends with a guy named Miguel, and I can't remember the guy from Sweden. Miguel was from Portugal. And we actually put out a podcast. He was hosting it. It was like Indie Comics something or another. That's the one podcast I can't remember. And that lasted a hot minute. There might have been like 10 episodes, if that. And I had really nothing to do with the logistics of it. I just showed up and recorded. And I remember early on I had like mic problems where there were issues with the way I would say words with S and stuff because it would come over the mic really funny. But it was a good learning experience. And I did a podcast with Derek Coward as well. I think we did it was it Trinity or Countdown? I think it was Countdown. We did a Countdown podcast. And Barb then joined Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. I spawned out Geek Brunch. We went for a long time and we formed this thing called Brunch Buddies. And what happened is that's where I met Eric and a bunch of other people and really, really good friends. And we'd talk with a lot of different people from around the world on several episodes, and that's what Geek Brunch was. And we talked a lot about comics, we talked a lot about food, we talked a lot about movies and TV and pop culture in general. Didn't really have any format, and that's kind of other than we talked about things, but we didn't really schedule discussions on anything. We just talked about what we read, what we watched, and had in-depth conversations. And then Heath left. And I'm still friends with him on Facebook, but he had some personal stuff going on, and he left. And during that whole time, a matter of fact, we went to Heroes Con. Eric Martin, who since passed away, unfortunately, had a heart attack. That's why I'm so up on health care, like for everybody, because if he would have had health care, I still truly believe that he would be alive today. But he came to me and he said, you know, Peter Rios stopped doing DC Noise, and I think that Comic Book Noise Family needs to have a DC podcast. And I recorded with Eric all the way up until the day he died, for the most part, you know. And then I almost thought about quitting it, and I met Mr. Keith Knutson. And then he became on DC Noise. And then later on, we used to be a lot more serious. And then Daryl came along as a guest. And we had this like weird chemistry. And the show totally changed from a DC podcast into Porch Sitters. And I call it because we were like old men on a porch. And we still do that to this day, the three of us. And then me and Daryl spawned off DC Weekly Reads, which we talk about the Weekly Reads just recently. But Geek Brunch, when Heath left, There was a hole there, and I almost thought about just quitting, but the brunch buddies came. there was Bill Bomer and Micah, and they were like, "I would love to co-host the show." And Bill Bomer and Micah joined, and that podcast spun off, and we did that for. We're still doing that today. Micah has since left. He kind of went on a school internship in Japan, and it kind of changed his life and his the way he looked at things. So he kind of like migrated off, but he's always welcome back. And me and Bill just keep going back. You know, me and Bill enjoy talking comics and that was. I still Geek Brunch is one of my favorite things to do, and the reason it is because I never know what the hell we're gonna talk about. I mean, sometimes we IM each other and say, "Hey, you know, there's some books on the new number ones that have come out, and we'll talk about those." But other than that, I have no clue what we're gonna talk about, and it's the most fun thing. And that's what DC Noise is. It's utter chaos. So I love doing that, and then out of Geek Brunch spawned Geek Brunch Retrocast, where me and Chris Ivey look at things retro, which is 10 years older, and that was on the same feed, and that went really awesomely well, and we're still doing that to this day, although Chris is taking a couple months sabbatical, and I got Rob Krieger to Krieger. I'm gonna get that right to help fill that gap. So that episode's coming out real soon, if not before this one. And I decided I don't know what spawned this. I used to post what I read each week, like I said with Derek, and then eventually I started posting it on Facebook. And then I was like, why don't I do a podcast about this and release it on there? Because I'm tracking all this shit anyway. So I did it, and Mike M's Weekly Reads is still going on. And out of Mike M's Weekly Reads spawn Mike M's Collector's Corner, which I really love to do, and I need to get back to it. I only have 3 episodes, but it's where I talk to hardcore collectors or collectors in general about collecting comic books. And that show has had a lot of critical acclaim. I even got Bob Bretall, who was the record holder, Chris Campbell, and several others. Kyle Pettit were the guests that I've had on that show. And I have 2 or 3 people lined up for that, and I need to start that in the new year or maybe over the break. To get that show back up, I'd like to have that show bi-monthly, and then there's Mike M Spotlight, and that's when a book just kicks me in the groin, and I absolutely love it, or I want to discuss it for other reasons, and I've only done that like 3 or 4 times, and because I have Mike M's, it has to be a book that really emotionally impacts me, so I could talk about it. But you can see I've done a lot of podcasting. I've had several appearances. Oh, we had a Valiant podcast also, which is not gone. And that podcast spawned out Valiant Versus, which I do solo. And that one's fun. It started off as one concept and then merged into another, but it's going to stay true to its form. But it has two ways of discussing things. One is when a Valiant book comes out and it versus something. I've done like that Valiant versus like Faith versus Poison Ivy, and I released that. And then I did Shadow Man, where I looked at every incarnation or volume of Shadow Man, and I picked out which one was the most my favorite. And I did the same thing with Exo Man of War. And I started Magnus and then I just stopped, but I'm gonna finish that and then and continue doing that one. I want to get like several of them recorded and under my belt, and then I'm gonna re-release all of them and make the show regular, but I want to wait until I've recorded like a lot of episodes before I even start to release them. And so Valiant Podcast with Daryl and Chris, that spawned off Gotham by Geeks, which is still going on, which is a Batman related podcast. That is with Daryl, Chris, and Russ. That one's real fun. We talk about all kinds of different decades of Batman, and there's and all Batman related movies and TV and news and all that stuff. And the thing I like about that is I get to explore things that I haven't explored or in an order that I want. And nobody controls that except for me. And every member gets to pick what they want. So that is a lot of fun. I like that format. So you can see I've done a lot of freaking podcasts, and then I've guested on a whole bunch of others. But that led me to this question that I had, and I asked it, and I got quite a few replies. I asked it during the holidays. I know when I used to, I don't even keep track of how many downloads anymore. It usually goes to Derek, and I used to ask for them, and then I decided I don't really give a shit. I podcast because I want a podcast, and so I don't have any idea how many people are listening. I do get a lot of feedback, so I anticipate there's several people that listen to the podcast, but I have no idea what it really is. I know cumulative, like over the year, it's a lot. Like it's in the thousands for like an episode. But other than that, I don't know what it really is, and I don't really care, to tell you the truth. I do it because I really enjoy it. But I'm a listener of podcasts. That's what got me started in podcasting. And this poll question, when I used to look at the numbers, I used to notice a decrease in numbers during the holidays. And I know why that is. It's because probably because of less time to record because of family commitments and things to do. But for me, I listened to less. So I posed a question, during the holiday season, do you listen to less, more, or about the same number of podcasts? For me, it's significantly less. Like right now, because of Thanksgiving, I am like a week and a half behind, and then they keep coming out, and I don't know if I'll catch up. And then when Christmas comes and New Year's, I'll fall even further behind. And then I'll probably catch up in January or February. And I don't listen to a lot. I mean, we're talking about maybe seven podcasts because that's all I have time for. I can't podcast. I can't listen to podcasts at work because I'm single-threaded and I have to concentrate on what I'm doing. So if I work on it, I wouldn't hear a damn thing that anyone's saying. I can't read in podcasts, like have it on the background and read comics because then I wouldn't hear it. I'm caught so engrossed in the comic book. The only time I do it is when I'm doing like chores around the house, cleaning or dishes or mowing the grass or walking Harley. That's the one that's guaranteed. Sometimes when I travel, but my work commute is very short, so that doesn't like get much listened to it during that time. But I was real curious because used to see numbers drop during the holiday season. But a lot of people, like Per Hedman, says he listens to about the same, so it doesn't affect him. Martin Ferretti says less, but only because a few of them he takes off weeks or two around Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's my answer. Because you have family things and you don't listen to podcasts when you're with family. You have events, you do stuff, nieces and nephews and brothers and sisters and family and eating and going to a stuff. I mean, that's kind of a big thing. And during those time, do I not? I don't really touch a podcast. And usually when I'm traveling to these holiday events, it's me and Barb, and I don't put on a podcast. We usually listen to Sirius Radio. So I'm there with Martin. That's pretty much my answer. Glenn Clark says the same, unless the podcasts I normally listen to take time off. So Martin is a podcaster, Valiant Central, Nerdy Legion, and Aftershock Central. Ronnie Barron says, I try to listen to the same amount, but it depends on who is riding in the car with me when we travel. So this is a lot. If it's teenage boys, he, and then if you listen to podcasts while you're listening to, you got to be careful what the podcast is, because if it's any of my podcasts, you do not want your family in there, especially if there's kids. I tag everything explicit. I don't fuck around. I'd rather be able to talk the way I talk than to have to edit. I don't edit shit. I don't. So that's why everything is explicit, because I don't know what the hell's gonna happen. But hang on, I lost the page I was on. But that's what Ronnie says. He's on Aftershock Central, Marvel Unlimited. Not unlimited, Ultimate Marvel. The reason I know it's that because it has nothing to do with the Ultimate line. It's just Ultimate Marvel Podcast. And he does Aftershock Central. Carlos Fuentes says the same. Alan Middleton, who is also a podcaster, but I don't remember the name of his podcast, says probably more because he's on break from work. So if you're on break, there could be more time or less time depending on your situation. For his, he can listen to more. Jim Dietz says more because he listens when he's cooking or doing housework. Paul Price says more because he has more time off. Rob Krieger says the same. Norbert Franz from Germany says it's a little less because he's not at the office and has a lot of holidays, and he listens at his desk with earphones. Ed Moore, who's also a podcaster, he does Lords of Order, which is Dr. Fate, and he does a Green Arrow podcast. He's also on the Comic Book Noise family. He says holidays do not change his work schedule, so he listens to them at work, so it's the same. Matthew Guy says more because of TV is on reruns during the winter break. Eric Grubb, who I know through the Star Joes podcast, says usually less because of the increased number of days off from work, and that's where I fall in. The more time off, the more I have to do. Joey Hargrove says more because he works more. Michael Sparkman says less. Gary Arkell, says he's consistently behind in podcasts, so he's always behind, but he always catches up. So if it's in the holiday season, he's listening to it in February, so it sounds like he's around always 2 months behind. Donnie Salvo, also a podcaster, says he listens to more podcasts. He used to be on Sunday Comics podcast, but that one is out sporadically. And then he's on Nothing's On with Daryl. And he shows up on a lot of the Taylor Network shows. Really good guy. I met him at Super Show, which was a Comic Con for Comic Geek Speak. Pretty amazing. Ryan Drost, Star Joe's podcaster, says probably more because he has more time off. Paul Tessenaere, the Valiant Central, and he says the same because he doesn't listen to any podcasts except for football podcasts. Tim Terrell, I talked about him earlier. Thum says probably the same. He's running around doing family stuff with members, and when he's at work alone, he's listening to ear sets. And Chris Campbell says the same. And Derek Coward always says the same thing. He says, "What is a podcast?" But that's some of the stuff. And then, man, this episode's running longer than I thought. So I wanted to talk about this previews because there's some really good collected editions. But I want to just focus on Marvel this time because I'm usually a DC guy. But I wanted to point out Thunderbolts. And the reason is because there's going to be original content story by Kurt Busiek and Bagley featuring the backup to Jim Zub's story. And I think that's going to be pretty phenomenal to see that. So it's celebrating 20 years of Thunderbolts. So I wanted to point that out. And then as you get into the collected editions, for those of you that know me, I am huge into the Ultimate line, but there's also a couple of omnibuses I want to point out. There's a Spider-Man omnibus, which is David Michelinie, which is probably my favorite Spider-Man writer, because that's when I really got into Spider-Man. I really got into Iron Man when Michelinie was writing it. He even wrote a lot of DC stuff that I wrote, but it's the Michelinie and Eric Larson omnibus, and it's solicited for $100, but it's 888 pages, featuring stuff from Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man and Marvel Comics Presents, so that's going to be a hell of an omnibus. This one I'm real curious about because a lot of people give Rob Liefeld shit, but I'm still a fan, and he does act kind of strange sometimes, and but his passion for the medium is still very addictive, and he's going back to the character he created. He's doing Deadpool Bad Blood, original graphic novel, where he writes it with Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, and he also pencils it, all penciled by him, and the covers by Rob Liefeld. And this one's interesting because I used to like Deadpool until he got ridiculous. So like in X-Force and stuff and New Mutants, I was all over that. So I'm going to probably check that out. That's in collected editions, and that's an original graphic novel. We also have Star Wars Legends Epic Collection, The Old Republic Volume 2. I am getting all the Epic Collections, so that's a done deal. Another one that's an omnibus that I got was I've been doing the Master of Kung Fu and Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, but you got Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Omnibus Volume 2, and this is from the magazine, Black and White magazine, and that's pretty awesome. I already have Volume 1. I also want to point out a couple of cool collected editions. One of them I know I'm getting, and one of them on the fence. They're not epic, but I was a huge fan of Cloak & Dagger, and there's a Cloak & Dagger Lost and Found trade paperback that collects Cloak & Dagger 1 through 11 and Strange Tales 1 and 2. The other one is, I have all the Power Man and Iron Fist epics, but I want to get this one. This is Iron Fist, the Book of Changes. It's not an epic collection, but it's collecting Iron Fist stories from Spider-Man 41 through 43 and Marvel Comics Presents 111, 113 through 118, 125 through 137, and 140 through 141, and Namor Annual number 3. So that one looks really... That one I'm on the fence with, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get that one. And then we get to the Epic Collections, man. They are pumping them out. And they're all like first volumes. They usually do these out of order for most of the bigger, longer running titles. But they're starting these at the beginning. And the first one is X-Factor Epic Collection, which is the collection that was by Byrne Layton, Simonson, Harris, Geiss, Nearly. Introduces Apocalypse. This is the X-Factor, which had the original X-Men, you know, Beast, Marvel Girl, Cyclops, Iceman, and Angel. So it should be really cool. And then we were talking about Rob Liefeld. They're releasing X-Force when he launched it. This one is not showing the New Mutants stuff, so it's just jumping into X-Force 1 through 15, a couple of Spider-Man issues, and Wolverine issues. This one I didn't like when it first came out, but because it's in the Epic Collection, I am going to get. It's Excalibur Epic Collection Volume 1 by Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, Herb Tripey. Alan Davis is drawing it, Ron Lim, Marshall Rogers. Should be good stuff. There's also a New Mutants Epic Collection by Chris Claremont, Bill Matlow, And Bob McLeod, Sal Buscema, Paul Smith, Ron Frenz, John Buscema, Frank Miller on art. And that's the New Mutants, so that should be good. So a lot of epic, man, there's a lot of epic collections. There's a lot of good DC stuff too, but I'm not going to get into that. So now I'm going to get into Mike M's weekly reads for the week. We have total of 37 comics. Again, this is the week beginning August 9th through August 15th, 2016. Five is I love it, four is I really like it, three is I like it, two is I did not like it, one is I hated it. So we had 9 Marvel and 28 DC, heavy loaded DC. A lot of ending titles that, as the rebirth came on, I was still finishing off a lot of the other titles, and that's what you'll see in a lot of the upcoming weeks. But Black Lightning number 11, this is volume 1. It was a Denis O'Neil story that dealt with the slave immigrant story. Really good story, but I rated it a 3 out of 5. It was one of the ones that I like the least. The Tony Isabella stories are much, much better. At the 3 out of 5, we also had Justice League 52. This is where, this was weird because it like ended with that great multi-crossover Dark Side event with Mr. Miracle and all that New God stuff. And this one ended like, I don't remember who the writers were, but it was not the Geoff Johns team. But this was Luthor arrives back on Earth after Apocalypse and claims the mantle of Superman, which plays, and he visits his sister, which plays heavily into Action Comics. So if I had known how much it played in, I might have appreciated it a little more. I think Abnett wrote this. I know he wrote 51, but another 3 out of 5 was Aquaman 47 through 52. This was where we got to see the beginnings of the Atlantean Embassy. It had a scavenger and a new villain called Deadwater. This was Cullen Bunn finishing some of his story arc, if I remember correctly, and then there was another writer, Abnett, which took over the rebirth, which has really sparked a lot of interest for me in Aquaman. Although he's always a character that I'm always interested in, even during the bad times. Now we go to the 4 out of 5s. We had Justice League number 51. This was a Robin first meeting with the Justice League. It focused a lot on Superman too. This was an Abnett written story. It's a 4 out of 5. We have Black Lightning number 10, volume 1. This is when a circus comes to town. It had the second Black Lightning. He had a weird red costume. He was a football player, and he ended up being kind of a hero, even though he was paid to be this role. And it also had the trickster. The trickster is dealing with stealing a jewel in the circus thing. We have Batman number 50 as I was winding down that. This is the Bloom conclusion. It had great scenes with Batman and Gordon, and that's why I really enjoyed it. This was the final arc, pretty much, of that one, even though there was a 51 and 52, which are actually ranked higher. And I don't remember, I think Scott Snyder wrote them, but they were really good stories. We have Deathstroke Rebirth number 1. It's the backstory with the Sons. He completes his current job, goes after the Clock King, and rescues Wintergreen. All of this stuff is so tightly linked. A lot of the Deathstrokes lately are 5 out of 5s for me. This is a top-notch DC book. We have Spider-Man 7 through 12. This was the out of the Todd McFarlane. I have all the issues, but it's out when I read it. It was out of the McFarlane Omnibus, which I really like. Spider-Man. And it was the conclusion of the Ghost Rider arc and the start of the Wendigo Wolverine arc, where the killer is a police officer. Really good stuff. Really enjoyed it. We have Robin 106 through 107, Volume 1. This was an interesting story where I read for Gotham by Geeks, where someone steals the Batmobile. Tim is with his best friend and they're joyriding. And they end up in a wreck, and spoilers, no longer trained by the Birds of Prey. They basically deny her training. She was being trained by Barbara and the rest of the Birds of Prey. We got Flash number 4. This is the Rebirth Flash. It's when they try to take out Black Hole, Dr. Carver, and Flash reveals his identity to Mina. We'll see in the future what happens to her. Action Comics number 961. This is where Mr. Oz, Ozymandias, I can't ever pronounce Ozymandias. God damn it. He's called Mr. Oz in here. This is when he sends help against Doomsday, actually captures Doomsday. So he's like capturing people from the Rebirth world. He also has another character which shows up in a future episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And Wonder Woman takes Jonathan and Lois to the satellite. We have Batman and Robin Eternal number 25 through 26, also a 4 out of 5. This is the death of Mother by Orphan, which is the man Orphan, not his daughter. Bluebird quits. She decides that, hey, this is it. I'm going to go to college. And we're seeing that in Current Detective. Orphan takes the mantle. Cassandra takes the mantle of Orphan, essentially what that is. And we all know where she ends up in. Batman, detective, and it's it, this story was kind of like a weekly series of all the Robins and all the supporting characters that Spoiler and Cassandra and all the Bluebird, you know. So even has Midnighter in there from Grayson. We have Flintstones number 2. This was a really good one. This is like a slice of life comic book. Really amazing. But they may rub people the wrong way because there are like underlying themes in religion and other stuff. But this is where they're buying crap, and it's making fun of just buying shit, you know, that really doesn't matter. A really cool issue, and they have to sell vitamins, some crazy stuff. Also, a 4 out of 5 is Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 3. This is where you're in number 2. They reveal that Cap is not, you know, he's working kind of as a pretending to be a agent of Hydra, and it's still giving some backstory, so it's still fleshing out, but you find out that Jack lives, and the Red Skull's baiting. Superman number 1, Superwoman number 1. This was pretty amazing. This is Lois and Lana, and at the end, there's a cliffhanger that you might lose one of them. And so far, they've stuck their guns there. We have All-Star Batman number 1. This was the Scott Snyder book. This is to protect Two-Face from all the mob bosses. It has a Duke backup. A pretty amazing series for me personally because it's like an adrenaline rush, you know. It just bam, 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 and then the backstory about Duke is really good to me as well. We got Red Hood and the Outlaws number 1. This is where he goes undercover with Black Mask. It has Ma Gunn's Homeward Home for Wayward Kids, and this is where Artemis shows up. So you had the Rebirth issue, which was just kind of like Jason Todd, and this continues from that and introduces Artemis to the book. We have New Superman number 2. This is where he helps Batman, and that's Bat Dash Man, the Batman from China, and the Wonder Woman from China. They help some rescue a woman. The father is going against the agency that created him. That created Later on, this is going to play a really big thing, so I don't want to really get too into it. We have Civil War 2 number 4. This is where Tony briefs the Avengers, and another innocent woman is captured because of what the Inhuman predicts for this woman. And being held against her will on the shield carrier. We have Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern Corps, number 2. This is 4 out of 5. This is John describing why he chose Guy, which was pretty amazing, to go out on his own to find out where everybody was. And really cool speech from Sinestro to his daughter. So really cool. That wraps out the 4 out of 5s. You can see there was a lot of 4 out of 5s. And then we have Detective Comics. These are 5 out of 5s. 938. This is the fight with the colony. There's a great moment showing the motivations of Colonel Kane. And we have a Clayface orphan. They get to cut loose in this issue. You have Red Robin going against Ulysses. Really cool stuff. Detective has been a top-notch book for me. We have Batman number 51, and I don't think this is a Snyder one. It could be. This was a Snyder one. This is kind of like the Swan Song, which is you had the story arc conclude in the previous one, but this is like a done and won by them. And it's Gotham loses power, and it's a quiet night. It was really a perfect issue. There was some really good quotes. There was one that said something like, "I hope you can see that if not in this column, then in the faces of the people you protect, even if it's just for one moment, even for tonight. I hope you look around the city and get to see us not at our worst, but our best, and take a quiet night to yourself." It was somebody, saying to Batman, "Take a night off." It was really good. We have Wonder Woman number 4. This was the amazing origin story, year one. Amazing. Can't remember if this is the issue. Maybe it was number 2, but where they have the Amazon contest. But Wonder Woman has been pretty high up there for me, especially the year one stuff. And then as the odd number, which was the current time stuff, started getting towards the end of the story, it became better to me than it when it how it started. 5 out of 5s for Batman number 52. This was a guy breaking in into a Wayne facility, like one of his homes, and stealing a notebook about how he felt when his parents died, and it had an Alfred insert. Really fucking amazing. That was the top book of the week that week. Batman number 52 from the New 52. And that's the stories. And then I have just a few questions that I want to close out on here. And then I'll call this an episode. I posted to see if anybody had questions. Michael Sparkman posted a couple of questions. Who's your favorite character of all time? I think I've answered this before, but I'm going to say it again. It's the Flash. He's kind of like the DC character that got me into DC, and I'll always, if I can collect one DC comic, even if it's not the best, I'd do the Flash. Batman's probably second. And then I have a lot of C and B list characters I love. What is your favorite comic book of all time? Man, that's a tough one. One of the series that comes to mind that I absolutely loved was Joshua Dysart's Unknown Soldier. I was in tears. I was emotionally invested in the story. It's so real, but fiction. You can tell that he's been in situations like this because it's so real. And that has got to be one of my top reads. There's so many of them. The other one I would have to say, because it really got me into collecting comics, it wasn't my first one, but it was when I realized that I wanted to collect titles. It was Defenders, and I always have to look this one up. But I always remember the cover's ingrained in my brain because I loved it so much. It's Defenders number 24 by Steve Gerber and Sal Buscema, and it has on the cover the Sons of the Serpent capture Doctor Strange, Valkyrie, Yellowjacket, and Nighthawk, and coming to the rescue is Luke Cage, Hulk, Daredevil, and the Son of Satan. Amazing book. I love it so much. So that's two things, two answers, two very different stories But I could go on for years telling you about my favorite books because I have so many of them. Those are the ones that always pop up to my head. What single issue in your collection means the most to you? Whew. I would say Defenders number 24, just because of it, what it meant to me. The other one I'm gonna have to look up too, but it's a Flash issue. But that one, I also know the cover, like it's ingrained in my, it's like at the Flash Museum, and there's Captain Cold, Captain Boomerang, Heat Wave. You know, the Rogues are on podiums like they're wax figurines. And it's a 20-cent issue, I know that. Had a Green Lantern backup. But that one I absolutely love, and I never can remember the number, even though it's ingrained in my brain as well, and I'm probably not gonna find it. Oh, there it is. It's Flash 234, and has the curator of the museum coming in the door, and he's saying, "Impossible! How could the Flash be struck down by wax statues of the deadliest foes?" And like I said, it has Captain Cold, Heat Wave, Captain Boomerang, Pied Piper. Man, and I love those Rogues, and Captain Cold being my favorite. But as far as like value or like the ones that like I cherish that are really high up there are Batman number 3, which is the first Catwoman as Catwoman. She's introduced in one as the Cat, but that is probably one of my most valuable ones. And then I also have from Flash Comics number 13, and that's a recent re acquisition, and that's a really big book to me to have in my collection. Has a great ho the ho Hawkman art. Oh my God, it's got a Hawkman cover even though it's Flash Comics. So it has the Jay Garrick opening story, and the last story is Hawkman. Oh my God, the art in there is so beautiful. It's golden age beauty. So I think that answers your questions. And Chris Campbell says, "What is your favorite Mr. Miracle story?" That's tough because it really. I'm gonna pick something really weird. You're not gonna expect it because you're gonna say Mike is one of the biggest Jack Kirby fans, but Mr. Miracle wasn't introduced to me until much later, and that came in DC Comics Presents. And if you're wondering what I'm looking at, it's my database. This database is amazing, so I can look at covers. But early in the run, there was a Mr. Miracle issue, and I bought this one off the shelf. And I had already known about Mr. Miracle, but once I read this, it spawned off like tracking everything else that Mr. Miracle had been into, because Mr. Miracle is one of my favorites. Another great one was DC Comics Presents with the Teen Titans, number 26. Plus, it's got an amazing cover because Green Lantern is making kryptonite out of his ring, and Superman's suffering from it. So what I'm trying to do is find out which Mr. Miracle cover that is, because again I don't remember the numbers, and I'm not sure I'm gonna quickly find it. Again, that's ingrained in my brain because it has Superman kind of like fighting Mr. Miracle, but Mr. Miracle has like images of himself all surrounding Superman, and I thought it was an early issue, but I may be mistaken. I really wish. Oh, there it is. It was an early issue. I just moused over it and then I lost it again. So what I'm doing is was it 14? Is that why I didn't see it? No, that's the Superboy one. There it is. It's number 12. And this is a Steve Englehart with Rich Buckler art. And like I said, it's got Superman like swinging like he's trying to hit Mr. Miracle, and he's really just hitting images of him. And he's saying, three phony Mr. Miracles, so the fourth one must be real. One solid punch, and this fight is over. And Mr. Miracle's thinking to himself, and so is your life, Superman. But, man, when I re this, let's see what year this was. 79, that year came out. And I think, like, man, was it 2 years later? I had all of the Mr. Miracle comics that had happened to that date. And every time there was a Mr. Miracle solo or a special or volume, I made sure I got it. Plus, I personally think that Mr. Miracle has one of the best costumes in comics for me personally. Firestorm, the original costume, was also one of my favorites. I think I spent way too much time on that question, or all these questions. I could It should have been an episode for each one of these. Ronnie Barron says, if I was going to read a Hawkman story, which would you pick? Ha! I also love Hawkman very, very much. And with your taste, I would say go with Geoff Johns' Hawkman. But I think you would really appreciate reading Hawkworld. It was a deluxe format book by Timothy Truman. Let me get you the year on that. Hawkworld. And it also spawned an ongoing. I'm talking about the Hawkworld miniseries. The Hawkworld miniseries is a three-issue deluxe formatted book by writer and artist Timothy Truman, and it was in 1989 and ran from August to October. I would highly recommend this. This is when they revamped his origin again, but Geoff Johns kind of ties everything together, and I think Geoff Johns' Hawk World is available in Omnibus. I actually have that. It's really, really good. And I would, once you get into that Geoff Johns, if you love the Geoff Johns, continue with it, because the Palmiotti and Gray Hawkman is pretty freaking amazing too. So that's what I would recommend in that order. Hawkworld first. Maybe even before that, Hawkworld Shadow Man, Shadow War by Tony Isabella. That's a four-issue miniseries. Then Hawkworld. And then Hawkman by Geoff Johns, and then continue with that with Palmiotti and Gray. So, I would read it in order, but if you feel like you want to just start with the character, go with Geoff Johns. But if you want to start from a more historical, where you work your way up, I would go with the Shadow War by Tony Isabella, and then go to Hawkworld, the mini, before you go to the ongoing, and then go to Hawkman. And I'll give you the volume of that Hawkman that is Geoff Johns' Hawkman, because he's had so many volumes. So Hawkman Volume 1 is the tw 20-cent one, I mean the 12-cent one. Hawkman Volume 2 is like the 75-cent comic. Hawkman Volume 3 is from 1993. Hawkman Volume 4 is the one that I would shoot for, from 2002 to 2006. That is the Geoff Johns one. Wonder where the other one is, Hawkman, because there is a, maybe that was called something different. There is the New 52 Hawkman. I wouldn't recommend going into that one. Do the Geoff Johns and James Robinson Hawkman with, and you have beautiful Rags Morales art on that run. And there's an omnibus for that one. And then if you really, really want to get into Hawkman, the Justice League years with the satellite years with Hawkman in it. Classic Hawkman Green Arrow stuff. Great, great stuff. All right, so that ends this episode. It looks like I've gone an hour. Plus, you have the collector stuff that's in attached to it. Hope you enjoyed it. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitters. On Facebook, you can go to Geek Brunch Podcast, and there's the episode there. You can comment on it. You could send me email at mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can go to the website itself at geekbrunchpodcast.com and leave comments there. And thanks for listening, and leave an iTunes review. That would be really helpful if you hadn't done that already. I will talk to you soon. Peace.